Hi, this is Alvin from the Missions Committee at Faith Community Fellowship. Along with Tammy Hodge and Stacey Olea, we decided to put this on as an addition to the questions and the study of Daniel, the Daniel series that Pastor Eric Camp has been leading us through for several months now. We've been looking at the style and the literature and the politics and the setting, and a lot of people have questions that brought up good discussion, and we thought it would be helpful to share them with the congregation through the lens of a trained professional, Pastor Eric Camp. So here he is with a few elaborations on some of those questions. This is from Faith Community Fellowship in Mount Vernon.
These are a couple of questions concerning the second half of the book of Daniel, where we really start to encounter some of the dreams and visions. And a lot of people, when they first look into these chapters, are very confused by some of the imagery, some of the visions, and what type of literature we might be dealing with. So we'll be looking just at a couple of questions revolving around that. And the first question is, are there any cultural influences that are coming forth in these visions and in these dreams that Daniel witnesses? And there are a couple of different historical backgrounds that I would say are coming together in this somewhat new form of literature known as apocalyptic, which we'll be talking about later. The first and probably the primary background is Jewish wisdom and Jewish prophecy. Both were viewed somewhat distinctly as writing styles. You had the wisdom tradition, most famously probably in the book of Ecclesiastes and in Proverbs, but also in Job and the Psalms. And then you had many of the prophets who spoke directly to Israel about kind of what's coming, what's taking place, and as a critique of that. And the wisdom book kind of represented the knowledge of God, and prophecy kind of dealt with God speaking to his people. And in apocalyptic literature, we kind of see these two things coming together in the form of a new style. You have in Daniel somebody who is viewed very much almost as the epitome of wisdom in the Jewish understanding. He was very wise. He comes out of a model similar to Joseph in that he understands dreams and visions. This is viewed very much as a wise person. But then he also kind of comes forward with this idea of prophecy, that God is speaking either to the people in the present or speaking about how God is going to be acting in the future. And so we really see these two kind of different genres coming together into a single entity here. Another large influence in these visions is the symbolisms that are taking place. A lot of them come out of what we would call some of the Middle Eastern creation stories. Genesis itself kind of uses some of the images and some of the understandings of how the world was originally created. And Daniel uses that as well, as he kind of puts the story of Israel into a cosmic significance. So this is about more than just Israel in their land. This is about Israel's place and role within the struggle of all of history. And so we see Daniel returning to to using cosmic language and cosmic symbolism. So there's the Great Sea, which represents chaos and all the powers that have the ability to undo creation. And we see, you know, the four great beasts coming out of the sea. That comes out of this Middle Eastern idea of the sea being the great enemy, and the ideas of Leviathan being the great sea monster out of that. And the fourth beast on Daniel 7 can't even be described. He's so frightening. We also, what's very famous is the idea of the Son of Man coming in clouds. And that kind of has a Canaanite background, where a lot of the deities were viewed as cloud riders. And this is something, once again, the Old Testament very much use, and God decides to make his presence known in a very similar fashion, whether it be leading Israel as a pillar of a cloud, or when they come to Sinai, he's hidden behind the clouds. And so we see cloud riding once again being another powerful image used here of a deity, and that's picked up here as well in Daniel. And then, of course, a lot of the animals we see are just very prominent animals throughout the area, throughout that time frame. You have the eagle, the king of the air, or you have the lion represented as well, the king of the land. Both these animals are very much depicted in there, in these visions. And I would say, though, the third cultural influence that is probably starting to come forth in here too is kind of some of the Greeks' understanding of history as a series of phases, or kind of epochs. Despite the fact Judaism traditionally, after the fall of David, has this view of the kingdom to come, and they kind of create two segments in history. The Greek world always kind of had already broken it down into four, and the most prominent one being four metals was their understanding of history. And Daniel once again takes that idea of history in a statue made out of four, but of course he adds the fifth stage in history, which is the great rock and the kingdom of God, which will shatter all of these. So these are kind of the cultural influences that I see that are kind of leading into the creation of Daniel, and where he's finding the symbols and images that he's working out of here. So the question was raised, if Daniel and if apocalyptic literature is kind of the combination of wisdom literature and prophecy, what books or what teachings would Daniel have used as he lived out his life? What would have been the books or the scrolls that he would have been reading that would have shaped his understanding? The primary one, of course, would be Torah, the first five books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, probably with a strong emphasis on the book of Deuteronomy, especially in light of, at the end, the book of Deuteronomy talks about how after Israel breaks covenant, they will be exiled from their land, and yet in that book there is the promise that Israel will be brought back and that will be a restoration. That book probably had a very high influence on Daniel, and we know it had a high influence on Israel in Babylonian captivity. Concerning the prophets, this would be a much more difficult one to discern. Especially because at this point, some of the prophets, the nation is probably still discerning whether or not they were true prophets. It takes time for a people to understand that this prophet was a prophet of God or not a prophet of God. And a lot of times it took history playing out for the people to understand this. For example, we know Daniel was reading the book of Jeremiah. Why would he be doing this? Because it turns out that Jeremiah's prophecy that Babylon would come and conquer Jerusalem had in fact taken place while the majority of his contemporary prophets were prophesying differently. So that would have given Jeremiah some credibility. And we know that in chapter 9 of Daniel, he's reading that with the anticipation that after the 70 years, Israel will be restored. And of course, in that book, Daniel gets a revelation that we're not talking about 70 years, but 70 weeks of years. But we could probably say that the prophet's critiques of the nation probably did have some understanding on Daniel, in the sense that it gives the explanation as to why Israel goes into exile. And so we would assume that he probably had some understanding of some of the major prophets that took place at that time, such as Jeremiah and Isaiah. We would guess Amos would probably be a high probability as well. But I think we can't be certain which ones he would have had discerned at that point were true prophets from God. So concerning the creation stories that Daniel may have been using or working off of, he mostly would be working off of Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, but those books use some of the cosmology of the ancient world. So we would certainly believe that even through those books, Daniel would have an experience of some of the cosmology that the ancient Canaanite people would be influenced by. But as an exile in Babylon, we would assume that Daniel at this point would be well versed in the Babylonian mythology, especially as he took his 3 years of training prior to entering the king's service. He would have been taught extensively these creation mythologies, the most common one that we recently discovered, known as the Enuma Elish. It has some similarities with some of the stories in Genesis, but the big thing is it provides a very different theology. So while maybe some of the stories sound similar with certain elements, the God which oversees those stories is presented quite differently. And so we can only guess and hope someday that we'll have a better understanding of what the Egyptian mythology was like. But Daniel most certainly had some familiarity with it, and it's probable that some of the imagery that Daniel uses reflects some of the Babylonian ideas as well. Midwestern sky, gray and cold. Sun never shines, but that's all right. I couldn't find the letters that you wrote me. What did you write? Next, we deal with the style of literature. This style of literature is known as apocalyptic literature. It is somewhat new, a new literature style when the book of Daniel is written. And for people familiar with most of the Bible, they'll know that Daniel and the book of Revelation are your two primary apocalyptic books. Ezekiel has some of it throughout, and Zechariah also is known for having a little bit in it as well. And there's been what we would want to say is, over the past 100 years or so, archaeology has discovered that this was a much more prominent style of literature than we had ever realized or believed. And so our understanding of apocalypticism has expanded a bit recently. And as we talked about, it was those different cultural influences brought together. But the primary way we would say or try to describe apocalypticism is even by its word, which is revelation, to reveal. Apocalyptic literature tends to look at history or looks at the world from the divine perspective, and it essentially tells people that the only way to truly understand what's going on and how to respond properly is through the divine revelation by God. God has to reveal to people what is actually taking place or what is going on. And so what this means is usually the earthly view perceives something very different than what the divine perspective will be revealed in apocalyptic literature. And so a lot of times we'll see, for this reason, that apocalypticism is used to combat or to oppose what is so easily perceived in the world or what's going on. And so one of the biggest questions, or one of the biggest things that answers, is why be faithful? Why be true when it seems to appear that the opposing armies, the opposing leaders, are always ruling? They're in control, they're in power. And apocalypticism gives you a revelation saying, no, they're not in control, they are not in power. Here is how history is actually taking place. Here is what's actually going on. You must be faithful to anticipate the divine plan and to understand the divine plan. But kind of a key feature of apocalypticism is this is only something that can be revealed by God. This is not something that that Daniel goes into the book, into the Torah, and gains an understanding of what's going on in history. No, he needs a new interpretation, a new understanding. It has to be revealed to him. And so we see a similar thing with the book of Revelation at the end of the Bible, where something has to be revealed to John. It is beyond just being able to discern in the present reality. And thanks to these revelations, to these new understandings, it's a call for people who might be struggling, who might be oppressed, or might be dealing with apathy, to remain faithful, to remain true as history unfolds according to the divine plan. Now we'll look at the idea of divine inspiration. In which way does this book divine or is inspired? And a lot of times when people think of the book of Daniel and they're talking about divine inspiration, they're talking about in what manner or in what way is this predictive of history? Is this the Spirit telling Daniel with absolute certainty how history is going to unfold? Or is this the divine Spirit speaking to Daniel and through Daniel to Israel and to the church as a whole of how to deal with history? What to expect and how properly to respond? And I think it's important for us to, anytime we deal with the matter of divine inspiration, is to think about the purpose of a book, a purpose of a dream, a purpose of prophecy. Very rarely does what the people of God need is to know exactly what is going to happen in history. Very rarely do we need to know that on such and such date and such and such year, this is going to take place. Because the truth is that a lot of times knowing those things doesn't change the central message of being faithful and true. The books, the visions, they deal with an understanding of history. These are the events that are going to take place. And primarily, what the books talk about very often is that things are probably going to get worse before they get better. People, the readers, usually perceive the Great Restoration coming immediately. They're always hoping for the new beginning immediately. And the book of Daniel warns them that the process of God, that God's timing is much longer and further out than we had anticipated. And if we don't understand that, this usually leads to some form of discouragement, trying to figure out why something is going wrong or what we're doing wrong because the divine plan is not taking place. But the purpose is in this is to assure people that the divine plan does exist and that it is taking place. And while there are certain signs that show us that it is moving forward, very rarely is it meant to be a predictive thing where we can see events and say this is specifically that or this is specifically this. Instead, it is a message of faithfulness. It is a message to remain true, and it is a message to have assurance that the plan of God is out there and that He is making sure that it takes place. And the final question is Daniel's original interpretation. And I feel we actually dealt a bit of that in Divine Inspiration, where we talked about the original interpretation is to help Jews who are going to endure these many different empires, to help them understand that this is still part of the divine plan. That this is still part of God's purpose, God's working throughout history. It is a means of keeping them from being discouraged and a means of keeping them from fearing these empires more than they ought to. For when we read these books, we do realize that, yes, the monsters are very large. They're very powerful. They're very frightening. And in one sense, they have no equals on the earth. But the key interpretation in there is every one of these animals has been given a time. They have been appointed a beginning. They have been appointed an end. And to those who remain faithful and true to the one God, through these empires, well, they will get to experience the kingdom of God, which comes at the end, which culminates this history, and it is a history with no end. And so it is a call to keep the divine perspective in mind as you witness your history, as you witness the things that are frightening you, the things that seem to have no unlimited power, the things that seem to define your time, that seem to, in some sense, define you, maybe even define the church, to remember that even those things which seem to have unlimited power are limited in the eyes of God. And it is a challenge and an encouragement to always have the divine perspective in mind, to always see the world through the revelation that Daniel receives and through the revelation that John will receive at the end.
Questions, thoughts, comments, ideas, rants, criticisms, etc. Some of them will be happily welcomed at faithcommunityfellowship.org. Visit us on our website, click around, and let us know what you think. Human beings and am I, what's a mob to a king? What's a king to a god? What's a god to a